This is lecture number 3 of A Day with John McMaster. Sunset Room, Ambassador Hotel, Los Angeles, September 20th, 1970. Entitled, What is Love? Copies are available from the Association of International Dianologists, 1700 Westwood Boulevard, Westwood Village, California, 90024. Area code 213-474-1565.
Thank you. Right, having spoken about the what might be a, it's like an existing condition, this circuitizing game. But I want you to, I want to just make quite sure that I clean up any little things I might have left behind. When a person is involved in such a thing, somehow or another, knowingly or unknowingly, and people are becoming the effect of it, there's only one way I know of, in which I said, of handling it, and that is to send back along the line love, as much of it as you can. Now, what is love? So, you know, there are many people have defined it in many different ways, but I have said it before, but I'd like to say it again. One day in 1964, when I was doing a certain amount of research for Ron, and we had started on solo audit and so on, I was sitting there and I knew that I had a feeling which I would normally call loving for a particular person, say. So I thought, well, now let's do something. Now, let me do something to find out what this is. You know, what are the components of it? And so I sat down and took out the first thing, separated out, and say it was a common interest of, well, we both liked silkworms. And then took out another one, well, we both liked roses. Took out another one, until everything separated out, and then one of the things, of course, was sex, and that was separated out. And then further and further and further, until there wasn't anything left at all, except just me and that person. You know, me and the other being, not even the bodies were there, actually. As I looked at this, and this was now my analysis of love, I don't ask you to, you know, accept it as such, but it was like the eternal reciprocity and having of each other. They're occupying that viewpoint and those many viewpoints and that one doing the same with me. And this is what I found in the end. So, as I say, generate love back. See, all these other things, common interests, common actions, common doinglesses, new creations, whatever it is that you want to co-create, whatever it is you are co-creating, all of these things can enhance, say, you know, the love that you have for each other. Sex can enhance it. But none of those things is in itself love, and none of those things is greater than it. And each one of them, you know, you can just use it and use any one of them to increase your loving, you know, of each other. So when I say generate love back along the line, to the person from where it might be coming. Say you've got a guy sitting at the top here now and he really has tried to do something worthwhile for mankind. And somewhere along the line the purposes have got slightly confused and he's getting bashed around, he's beginning to feel unsafe, he's beginning to feel it's necessary to look for enemies or whatever. Now it's only because the guy is unsafe that he's beginning to feel this way. Now if you can generate love back, say everyone who happens to be associated just sends back a tidal wave of love, after a short period of time this guy's barriers begin to go away. He begins to feel safer and safer and safer. Now, if the person I'm talking about happens to be Ron Hubbard, if it is, then the man has done something tremendous. Well, for instance, if I hadn't passed that way, this body would be dead. And there is no doubt about it. So, obviously, it might not be gratitude, but it might be something I feel. And it's a love that will, so far as I'm concerned, always be there. No matter what little frictions or what little outnesses might come, you know, how stupid of me to make one little outness or one little policy letter or one little action taken in the name of a man greater than what I have known to be the love of my survival. And the love that helped me survive. And what I like so much in Dianology is that this is already there. There will never be a state where you start running around, looking around every mulberry bush for an enemy. There will never be. Now, Jack told you about what happened to me in New York. I'll just tell you what happened. I did get various warning messages in South Africa and told, you know, not to come. There is something going to happen to you that's terrible. You will not be welcome, so on and so on. And lots of my friends have probably been forbidden to come here. That's all right. It's only one little mock-up in everything else. And suddenly, it will go. Because the love that is there, that's greater than all of this, obviously is going to survive. So what happened in New York was I landed and I was just standing at the customs and eight security guys came along and whipped me off into a little room in the basement of the airport there and started taking all my things to pieces and stripping me naked. So I said, why are you doing this? I wasn't expecting to be raped, but... anyway, I just said, why are you doing this? So they said, we have had a very convincing report that you are a diamond and LSD smuggler. So I said, oh, that's a pity. And they went on searching and taking everything to pieces and looking, tearing out the lining of my suitcase and looking in and so on. And of course I knew, having worked along, you know, closely with some of this sort of stuff, I knew where it had come from. And I thought, how silly to try and stop me from reaching where I am going. I do not have the other end here that could stop me. I do not have that negative magnetic field. And it was an indication to me that they still do not know where I reached with that technology. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And no matter whether that came from that order to have me arrested in New York to stop me from reaching Jack Horner and all of you, no matter where it came from, it couldn't. And it was rather surprised me that they didn't know. Because I was on a true line. So long as I am on a true line, man will be with me. And so that's how that came about. And I want, you know, then more and more you see the one thing that is the most pro-survival of all. And that is this thing. Call it what you like. I call it love. You know, and the reception of it and the giving of it. The reception of it and the giving of it. And not limiting it to the functioning of a body. You know, but being right out. You can be right out across the planet right now. Looking into areas, and there's a little bit of problem there, just pour your love there and watch what happens. You can move out across the whole of the universe and pour your love there and watch what happens. You know, just suddenly, what was confused and tied up and knotted, suddenly, for no reason at all, apparently, except that you loved it, you know, or generated love, all of these things unravel. They separate out, they individuate, and look and see and know, and then that confusion, which was a product of not accepting love. See, all the... I've said this so many times, but I just... It's so real to me. Again, I don't ask you to believe it. The problem is not lack of love. You know, love, more love, we need more love, we need... There is so much love that goes suppressed, unacknowledged, twisted round corners, apparently unwanted, unable to be fulfilled, apparently. You know, just sort of going out all over the place. Now, if one could look at that and see, you wouldn't go running around. Are you indicating the wrong item to man when you say there's not enough loving around here? Is that there's not enough, you know, freedom to receive what is there? Because you are the greatest lovers ever. And it's pouring out of you all the time. But it's just the awareness of it and where it goes and the feeling that it's not going anywhere and the feeling that you can't and you feel that you're shrinking. But I was auditing my mother just a few weeks ago, on a very simple process, and suddenly she said what she was being. She said, I'm being a withdrawing being. And I'm constantly, I didn't even realize that I'm constantly withdrawing. And as she began to look at this, you see, she looked, what was she withdrawing from and where was she withdrawing to? And so she discovered a tremendous number of things about why she was doing various things around the house and why she was doing various things around the town and various things around the universe and so on and so on and so on. But for some reason or another, it's like, wasn't quite service facsimile. Jack's got a marvelous thing that he doesn't call service facsimile. He says, like, a person can sometimes be right without any intention of wanting another to be wrong. See, and that's quite true, too.
Could you say that last sentence again, please? I didn't
hear it. Yes, certainly. Jack has got a very nice thing. Where he said, you know, we've got the concept of service facsimile, whereby you are doing something to be right in order to make others wrong. Well, it isn't necessarily only that. You can be right without any intention whatsoever of making another wrong. Jack calls it the solution facsimile. You know, you just can't be right because you want everyone else to be right too. And then you can't be happy because you want everyone else to be happy. And more and more and more, you see, what I, in my own life, the great value, the greatest thing is the concept of auditing, to audit and be audited. And whatever you are using, if you have the intention that this is going to help this person, the person will be freer and freer and freer. That's why I say, you know, the basics are more important than the actual technology. Although the technology at this time is tremendously important, and the more viewpoints the technology helps a person to occupy as they're moving free, so the more value a technology has. But there will come a time, for instance, when each of us has achieved a state of infinite freedom, or whatever, when the technology will automatically erase itself. You see, it will just erase, because there's no longer of any, you've used it, the stepladder, to get where you were going to get, and now the stepladder is no longer necessary. You don't have to go up, down, front or back, left or right, you see. Because there will be no up and down, no front or back or left or right or whatever. You will be where you want to be. And these things are only relative anyway. So, like the general intention here is to get us to a stage where we have complete tolerance or complete acceptance or complete duplication one of another or infinite duplication one of another or whatever other potential there might be. Now, if we could sit down right now, say, just any two of us or all of us together, and just totally duplicate each other, then we wouldn't need any technology. In other words, you know the training drill zero, which requires you to be able to confront. If you could sit down there and have total confront or complete or infinite confront one for another, well, you wouldn't be needing any of the other things. You see, that they are only there to help you to get out of the way those things which have prevented you from confronting each other. So, but you will see that at this time they are necessary, just simply because it is very difficult to sit down and have complete confront of the one sitting opposite you, the whole of the time track, all the viewpoints spread equal across the universe that another has and that you have, and the ones that you might have that are the same that you're both hiding. Which we call, say, a mutual rudiment or something. You know, does that make sense?
Yes.
Well, it's like these are the things, you see, that make it difficult to confront, and so you get people presenting technologies to the world, and all of these are very, very good, because Jack's technology is sound. He worked with Ron in the early days, and if it had been possible, you know, all the way along the line, for all the people to have had enough love, enough understanding of each other, then no one would have been told, well, you can't come back to Scientology. And therefore, there wouldn't have been anything else but Scientology, and all of that technology that has been evolved by Jack and other people, and many have done good things, would have all been part of what was at that time called Scientology. Because nobody wanted actually to break away. But when you start passing laws that say to a guy, well, we can't help you anymore, You can't expect that guy to just drop down dead. Particularly when the whole purpose of the technology, as I said to you earlier, was a bridge over which every last one could pass. And so therefore now you've got this, Dianology. And I am so glad that you are as you are and have set me free enough to be able to be what I am. You know, just to be able to be what I am, and I can go around being the friend of man. And not saying, well, I can't have anything to do with that group, or anything to do with that group, anything to do with any other group. This man wants to do it that way, that's fine with me. In New York, I was on a television show one day when the person who was interviewing me said, what does it feel like to be so famous? And I laughed. It was the funniest question, momentarily. So she said, what are you laughing at? So I said, well, I've never put me, John McMaster, and fame together. Do you mind if I just have a look at fame? And she said, yeah, all right. And then instantly I looked at it, and I said, ah, it's the agreement you get from the people of the earth to be what you are. And if that's what I've got, it's the loveliest thing. You know, just to be what I am, and nobody says you ought to be this way, and you ought to be that way, and you ought to be any other way. And this is what, you know, more and more and more has been sort of like the gift of man to me. And what I have wanted to do, and I've said it quite often, is just go on communicating to man long enough until he has received through me what he gave me, what was given to me from man, a tolerance of me. You know, that's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Even though at the moment some of my friends are not allowed to come and see me today, it's all right. That is just something, so long as I let it be there, that markup of the possibility of my being, say, an enemy or something, just the possibility of, well, that's all right, I must now look, because I'm the other end of that, look at it and see, well, right, I can have that or not have it, and it's just a transient thing because I know what lies underneath that. You see, well, what lies greater than that, and that is the feeling that we have for each other, that no mock-up can ever be greater than. You know, no mock-up can ever be greater than it. I'd like, you know, sometimes in a session somebody says to you, was a question, do you have an ARC break with someone? Then one day, just suddenly, the answer was no. I don't have an ARC break with anyone. And then said, oh, your needle's floating. Fine. Does someone have an ARC break with you? The answer was no. This is a little bit unreal. Does someone have an ARC break with another? No. Oh my God, this guy's getting more theety-weety all the time. And so I said, let me explain to you what's going on. I'm suddenly realizing that spirit, or theta, whatever you like, can't have an ARC break with theta. It can only have an ARC break with a markup. A markup that you agree to have there. So I said, if there's someone across the world who considers that he or she has an ARC break with a being that's running the body called John McMaster, then they are kidding themselves, because they are having an ARC break with what they have mocked up. And so long as they keep that mock-up there and agree to have it there the way they've got it, they will have an ARC break. But it's not with me. It's with what they have mocked up. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And does another have an ARC break with another? No, they have an ARC break with what they have mocked up of another. You see, now in South Africa, I was told by some of my staff the other day, that the Scientology organization, which doesn't want to have anything to do with me at the moment, for its, you know, some of its own reasons, said that what are they working with me for, and what are they coming to me for auditing for? I'm in ethics. So they came to me and said, well, am I in ethics? You know, look, am I in ethics? So they said, no. So I said, well, do you know what is in ethics? So they said, no. So I said, their own mock-ups. So they've got themselves in ethics with their own mock-ups. And they are actually looking out of ethics at me. So it's only their own markups that they've put there. Whatever it is they've conjectured now as me. But I can still help that. Not by being critical, but just by helping them feel safe enough to see for themselves that it is only their own markups and that I'm not in a potential danger to anything that man might be doing that's pro-survival for man. Because it could never have been, maybe you can correct me on this one, but the way I looked at it, and the way I knew it to be, it could never have been around the whole world for me and this little body and all of you the way it has been if I was a potential enemy to man. Because you helped me not to be. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You actually helped me not to be. And so I no longer had fear of you. So why should you fear me? And so if something else happens, you see, and you become a little bit unreal to people, like I hadn't seen some people for a long time, that Durban, where I came from, was the happiest, most proud city in the world when the body, or the Thetan using the body called John McMaster, was announced to the world as the world's first peer. So I go back now. What could possibly have happened? Where could things have gone that these people should suddenly look at it in another way? See, what is, and something's out. Well, all right, I'm not on the lines at the moment. I'm not on the organization line so that I could help, but I can still help because I'm on other lines, which, strange as it may seem, are infinitely superior to any organization lines. You know, and if in the evaluation of importances one keeps that there, then you will have no trouble. And so far as this is concerned, my visit to you, out of this is going to come, so far as I'm concerned, just a much, much greater conceiving of love. You could almost call it the consummation, if you like. Not because of me, but because of all of us. And what is going to generate from here? If there'd only been five of us, two of us, but actually there are a lot more. And where two or three are gathered together in the name of peace, of love, that is enough. You get the agreement on it and it generates out, 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 out. You see. I'm not going to be critical about it. I think it was maybe like a thing that helped a lot of people cognite very quickly. The comparisons between Dianology and Scientology. Actually, I would rather it had been called Dianologists and Scientologists, you see. Or what people do with Scientology, what people do with Dianology. I'd rather it had been that. Because the ologies are independent, pure technologies. They are independent, pure technologies with the same purpose. And there's no reason why they should be maligned at all. It's just like people taking something and make a mistake with it and say what shouldn't have happened was, what people do with Dianology, what people do with Scientology. And then the thing to me would have read better. But it was something that I think probably helped a lot of people to get some viewpoints. Not so much the Dianology people, but helped a lot of Scientology people to suddenly look and see. Now, and if they can take it not as a threat or a challenge, or anything that was nastily intended, but rather a corrective measure that was being put out, then I think that a tremendous amount of good would come out of something like that. And I'm sure that it had no other intention, did it, Neville, other than good should come from it. No other intention at all. So one can look at these things, and it depends immediately, the clarity of the person, the extent to which, what sort of mass gets re-stimulated, and how they see it, and what happens. Now, there needn't be any mass re-stimulated at all, but the fact that there is mass indicates, of course, that we still need technologies to help these things get out of the way. Now, I said to Jack earlier, I have been around the world a few times, and I have lectured in various places, where I've had 20 to 100 people, and I have watched over a period of weeks and months where the Scientology audiences just went up to the 7,000-8,000. And I can see no reason why, if you chaps get going, the same shouldn't be in a matter of weeks and months, why these audiences shouldn't get up to 7,000, 8,000, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 for that matter. Billy Graham gets somewhere around about 250,000. There's no reason at all why it shouldn't go like that. And one needn't have limitations on space or what sort of, we haven't got enough space. One day at St. Hill, I was at that time international choral, you know, traveling around putting the choral divisions in and across the world. But I'd come back and they were having problems in the choral division. And so I was asked to go and be choral sec for a while at St. Hill. So I went in, and at the end of the day, I started about 3:30 in the afternoon. At the end of the day, I called them all together and I said, please, will you come in just 10 minutes early tomorrow morning so we can have a talk and get together. So I said, and some of them had come to me and said, oh, the tech division only gives us one auditing room. And we've got no space, no space, no space. That's why we've got a backlog. So I said, oh, thank you. I didn't look at it again until the next morning. And I said to them, so they were all there, the whole staff, and the auditors and the students of the level 7 interns. And I said, right, so you're agreed upon the fact that the problem is no space. They said, yes, yes, that's it. So I said, right. And suddenly I knew what to say. I never prepare anything because it takes me out of present time. And I never know what I'm going to say. Somebody says, what are you going to lecture on? I don't know. Because, you know, it's like one's here and we are here and we just start off and off we go. Well, I didn't know what I was going to say when I spoke to them, but I knew I just wanted to get into communication with my staff, you see. So I said to them, right, you are agreed upon the fact that the problem is no space. Therefore, you've got a backlog and all those people are sitting waiting. They said, yeah. And suddenly I knew. I said, right, you have one auditing room. I said, yes. I said, right, you ordered one pre-clear per hour. So you've got so much space for one, you know, and so much space is being utilized per hour. So I said, but if you audited two pre-clears or three pre-clears or four pre-clears in 1 hour in that space, have you doubled, trebled, and quadrupled the space? So they said, ah. So if you use the space four times as fast, you've got four times as much space. So I said, where's your problem then? Space or time? So they said, ah. By 3 o'clock that afternoon, there was no backlog. Everyone was happy and out and shining. They had suddenly realized they'd stuck themselves at the wrong level of problem. It was actually time. And the moment they manipulated time, they were off. They kept on this. Well, somebody said it's space. That damn tech division won't give us enough auditing rooms, you see. So it's all the tech division's fault. See, all off on source. You know, allocating the wrong source, the tech division wouldn't give them space. That all they had to do was start using that space that they did have, really using it, with a tremendous velocity. And of course, then there was no problem at all because the tech division just removed its barriers because it wasn't the tech division in the first place. It was their own consideration that they had a space problem that was limiting their own action level. And then I looked a little bit more deeply after. That was my first time I'd ever looked at a thing like that. And then I thought, boy, let's have a look. You know, you think that your problem is matter. Have a look at energy. It's sort of like a reverse of going earlier similar. You think your problem is matter. Look at energy. And you think your problem is energy. Look at space. Think your problem is space. Look at time. You think your problem is time. And it's still not blowing. Then look at you. You know, look at you, the being. Anyway, these things are just sort of part of the things that I looked at, you know, on my way through, and part of the things that have helped me, and helped me to help, say, quite a lot of other people, and they are still very real and very rich, and they belong, so far as I'm concerned, with me and with all people. So, when you see, if I haven't succeeded in doing it today, removing whatever barriers there might be between, say, me and the Celebrity Center, or me and ASHO, or me and the LA Org, or me and the AO, or whatever, if we haven't succeeded, you indicate to them, generate your, you know, willingness for them to be, and your tolerance of having them so they can have you, and this is what we should be doing all the time. Because Like, to each his own. And if people want to come, as Jack said in the introduction to his book, if people want to go the Scientology way, they're welcome. If they want to come the Dianology way, they're welcome. See, and this is how it should be. All the way along the line. And probably, the more there were, because there are so many people on Earth, the faster we would clear the planet. Because you would begin to have so many nuances of approach that there wouldn't be a single person left out. There'd be enough ways and means of approaching a road to truth that everyone could be fitted in. Otherwise, you're going to have such a hell of a job constantly reforming one technology and its organization that eventually it's going to become so vast and unwieldy that it's just going to fall all over itself and fall all over its people. You see, I do not see any organization that's going to be able to encompass in totality until it has until simplicity has become infinitely more real to man. So as far as I'm concerned, the problem is getting truth to man fast. See, the problem is not building organizations, the problem is getting truth to man. Therefore, get truth to man. And get it whichever way man can receive it. You know, because there is so much space, there are so many people, there is so much to be done. And of course, the great pity is ever having to give it a name. If we could all just call it the search for truth or something and go out with whichever ways and means we have, instead of the moment you call this analogy and that analogy, and then these two have to fight. Because this one says I'm better than you, and that one says I'm better than you, and yak, 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 and then so on. Half of the attention is dispersed. Instead of going shoo, just at the greatest velocity possible along a production line, it's being dispersed all over the place into little stuck attention units of what did they say about us yesterday? And watch out for that group, there's a potential enemy there. Meanwhile, they're all busy working. You see, the attention is getting stuck back, and people are being therefore knocked off purpose. Anyway, so much for that. The whole idea of it is, here is a production line, it obviously works. I have got a beautiful example in, you know, the certainty and the freedom of Neville, for instance, may I say it? I saw Neville in Durban, and I have audited him briefly in Durban before he came over here, and he was coming over to the AO, and then he saw Jack, and he went across to Jack, and he liked that, and he fitted in there. Now, Neville has done something he wanted to achieve. He wanted to contribute. He's always wanted to contribute. But somehow he found a block in the one place. But when he came to the other place, he didn't find that block. And so he moved, and he got through what he wanted to get through. So I look at that, and am I going to go around and say something's wrong, because Neville is better? Because he didn't use Scientology, he used Dianology. It would be crazy for me to say this. I'm just delighted that he's achieved what he wanted to achieve. And it's the same with anybody. Now, if somebody else came, like Chuck Berner's got another way. You see, people are at all, they've got different interest levels, they're at all sorts of different awareness levels, although they are capable of any awareness levels. And they look at this and they are more oriented that way, or more oriented that way. And some people want to say, well, I'm not interested until I've got my body fixed up. Like, last year when I went to the United Nations, I wanted to get the African nations and states interested, well, Ron asked me to do this, interested in Dianetics and Scientology. So I went along and I spoke to the ambassadors of Nigeria and the ambassador of Ethiopia and the ambassador of Tanzania and various of these ambassadors, and then they brought in their ministers of education for the ambassadorial missions, and we sat down there and we talked. And these people said to me, and it was obviously so sane, they said, well, if you can help us to rid our people of malaria first, and then help us to feed our people properly and house them properly, it would be only too marvelous to have what to then do, you know, what you want. So you can see then, you couldn't get a person's level of, if a guy is suffering from malaria, you couldn't get his attention that unstuck from that. If he's suffering from malnutrition, or from constantly being out in the miserable weather, his attention is stuck on these things which he hasn't got, you know, the lack of havingness, the damnness of it. So if you provided him with a means to be free from malaria, fed him well, provided him with a home, then you introduce this new thing which elevates him into a mental approach to his whole existence and then a spiritual approach to his whole existence. So in life, that is an extreme example, but in life you have some people who really are working to get their temples or their bodies in perfect shape. They really want to. So they want to concentrate on dieting. The best for that temple, to make it the most shining, beautiful thing that they can make of it. So that's their approach. They come in that way. And then as they are succeeding on that, so their attention goes on to, say, something like the mental aspect and then the spiritual aspect. But they aren't wrong for doing it that way. Other people come straight in, they would rather handle the mental, and then realizing that as they've handled the mental and the spiritual, then so that they will change their bodies anyway. But nevertheless, a body requires a certain amount of good attention. But one thing that happened to me, and maybe it's happened to millions of you, and this happened in 1963, just towards the end of the year, I suddenly realized that I didn't want to sleep, and I didn't want to eat, and I didn't sleep, and I didn't eat. And this went on for a period of days and days and days. And then Red Sharp had that Christmas party, I think you were at it. And you remember I danced all night, all the time, dancing around the place. And Woody McFeeters was there, I remember. He commented on how graceful I was. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make here is that there was all of this happening. And I wasn't paying much attention to anything except I was so enjoying being with everybody and just dancing to all this lovely music. And then about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, most of the people had gone. This was at Red Sharp's Christmas party. Most of the people had gone, and Ron and Mary Sue had been there, and they had also gone. And so I realized that something was happening that I hadn't looked at. So I went and sat on one of the big chairs at the end of Reg's music room, and he put up his hi-fi so high. And the music was just pouring, and it was just marvelous. You know, it was sort of coming through every pore of my body. So I went and sat in this chair and watched. Something's happening that I don't know about, but I'm just about to find out. And I looked, and there was the sound coming at me, you see, just coming like this. And something happened to it, and my body felt better. And I thought, oh, I'm translating energies. And it was coming, and my body was feeling better, you see. And I was feeling stronger and stronger, and I still didn't want to sleep, and I still didn't want to eat. And then I realized that all the beautiful things that I was totally in tune with, I translated the energy. And the easiest one was sound. And I had got onto a pattern of doing this without even knowing. And it was, for me, just the most marvelous thing. Oh! And then, of course, after a little while, I began to tell a few other people. And for a moment, it went. You know, I lost it, because I began to tell a few other people who said, oh, he's up to his craziness again. And, of course, I was vulnerable. And I bought it. Momentarily. But, now, you see, if you come in through the spiritual or mental level, or, you see, you come in through there, that is something you could find yourself doing. So it wouldn't really matter whether you ate white bread or brown bread or whole wheat bread or whatever. You would translate it into whatever is perfect for your body. You could do that. Nothing is impossible. But on the other hand, if that is going to be an art gradient, then feed your body with the perfect food for it. So whatever approach you use, it's all okay. Why should one be better than another? You're coming in at whatever level you want to come in at, where your interest level is, where you are being, want to be creative. So you come in, and we all move, and we'll all end up where we can do everything anyway. I hope that, you know, this is making a little bit of sense, because it was part of, as I saw things, and as I see things more and more and more and more, because at one stage I tended to be so oriented that I considered that you can go straight in, which is probably quite possible, you can go straight in and help a spirit, the spirit of a body, to become so sure, so immediately, that the guy could immediately handle whatever he wanted to handle and take up his bed and walk. Now, I do know that is possible. I know it's very, very, very possible, and it's the potential of everyone. But if the guy is not oriented that way, then it's not so possible. He might want to, you know, be oriented another way. Like, you could go along, if a guy had a severe accident and he's lying in the middle of the road with his jugular vein cut and a few other veins cut and he's bleeding to death, you could quite conceivably get him to heal that instantly with a touch assist or something like that. But if it wasn't real to you that, and real to him that this could happen, you'd better get a doctor pretty fast to sew up that jugular vein. But as we progress with more and more reality on these things, it is going to be so that there will be no doubt. The moment the doubt comes in, of course, it's gone. But there will come a time in the very near future when there will be no doubt at all. That, boom, you know, just fix your body. You know, just fix it, boom, and it's fixed and you're off. That's how it seems to me anyway. Am I laboring you on and on and on? So, the sort of essence of what I wanted to say is simply that there are many and varied ways, and each one of them is okay. And so it's only one's own doubt or one's invalidation of something when suddenly it appears that this is wrong. And if anybody puts out, see, if anybody is putting out, this is the only way, that is not the way, and that's wrong, and anybody who goes to anything else is a potential enemy, then love that guy. Love him more and more and more, because that is what he's losing on. That is what he's losing on. Love him. Just love him. What's it? Camelot. You know, I was telling my staff in Durban, you know, love him, simply love. The way to handle a woman is love her, you know. Well, it's the same, the way to handle the whole world is love it. Love it. Love all the people. Love them. It's the way to handle. It's true. It's not just a song in Camelot. You know, and when I was lecturing, the last lecture I gave before my trip to South Africa in December last year, it was just a couple of days, and I knew what was happening, and I could see it all on the future track, and I didn't want to do anything about it at all. But I sat down in New York, knowing this, and gave the last lecture, and I said to them, as the human race, there is a song that says, this time, we nearly made it, didn't we? Do you know that song? I said, right, well, that's not the song that we are going to sing. The song that we are going to sing is, this time, we made it. You see, and as there become more and more of these reaches and technologies, and people getting together, in whichever way they do, so it becomes progressively more obvious that this time, we made it. So, just tell them all, you know, where King Arthur says right at the end to the little boy, go and tell all England, you know, when he takes the message of the Knights of the Round Table, might for right, not might is right, might for right, which was the, you know, sort of caption of the Knights of the Round Table, and he says to this little boy, take it and tell all England, and he shouts in the dawn, tell all England, might for right. The message of this. Well, I just ask you to generate across the whole of the universe. They need have no doubt, this time we've made it. And it's because of you, and because of what Jack is doing, and because of what Ron Hubbard is doing, and because of what all the people are doing. This time we made it. Thank you.
Our next and last lecture is scheduled for 4 p.m. And I would appreciate it, we have a couple things to do up here. Give John, I know some of you want to talk to him, but give him about 10 minutes up here, and then you can come up and chat. We've got a couple things we need to do up here, take some pictures and so forth. So give us about 10 minutes and then you can come on up, okay? Thank you very much. See you at 4.